Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. And thank you for joining me today. Oh, Thanksgiving's rolling right in, and it's a favorite time for me. I don't know about anybody else. I think for a lot of vegans, it's a very important holiday, and I want to say that we own it, or we're starting to take it over. It's an interesting time where, for most people in the United States, this is a time to display the flesh right in front of everyone on the table, which is why it's such an important holiday for vegans. And many people have their own Thanksgiving events or go to others, or they make their own dinners. It's also a time that really highlights the dynamics with family members. So I'm wishing you very well, a very happy holiday, and maybe later on in the program we'll talk a little bit more about Thanksgiving. But I want to bring on my very first guest, and it's somebody that I met not too long ago at it was the Veg News Comfort Shindig, celebrating Veg News relaunching, and we're really excited about Veg News and everything that they're doing. And I met a lot of fabulous people there. And I met Madeline Alcott, and she is the founder of a company called Petit Four, a luxury vegan beauty box subscription and boutique. She's a former nomadic teacher, and her business came to life after many years of green beauty enthusiasm and a dream of creating the ultimate ethical beauty destination. Hi, Madeline, and welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to connect with you again.
Oh, yeah. I remember meeting you at that Veg News party, and you're making me hungry just thinking back to it.
Yeah, there were a lot of great things. I spoke to Jay Astafa last week on this program, actually. He was the chef who created all those great little bites, the little burgers and the grilled cheese and tomato soup. Really fun things.
So good.
Yeah. Now, we're not really going to be talking specifically about food. Maybe there's some candies, or we'll find out, related to your beauty box. I'm not really sure. But something that I like to tell all of my listeners, especially when it comes to personal care products, I prefer to use products on my body that I would eat. And because there are so many synthetic materials in personal care products today, and the skin is our largest organ. It takes everything in.
Absolutely. It is very important to sift through all the ingredients. And I mean, there are many benefits to shopping vegan and non-toxic. It's not only better for the animals and the environment, but also for our health.
Now, let's talk about the name of your company. And how do you pronounce it?
We say Petit Four.
Okay. An American version of, and it sounds just like
American
Petit Four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of our subscribers are American. So, you know. I came up with the name. Really, it all happened within like a 24-hour span, where we came up with this idea for the business, and the name and the logo, everything just sort of fell into place. But at the time, I was working at this adorable little children's toy shop in Baltimore, and I was always fiddling around with this Petit Four toy. And so as I'm working at this shop and my mind is elsewhere, you know, dreaming about having my own vegan business, the idea just popped into my head, because it made a lot of sense to me. We wanted to have a little box of treats, and our treats are not really edible. They're beauty products, but I thought Petit Four really described the pretty box of samples that would offer just a taste of the creme de la cruelty-free. So we threw in the V for vegan as well.
Right. Creme de la cruelty-free. That's sweet. Well, you know, what is exciting about this is that you couldn't have launched a business like this, maybe certainly not 20 years ago or 10 years ago, maybe not even 5 years ago. And this just shows all of the new vegan businesses that are popping up to fill all of our desires, all of our needs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you can start your own business nowadays. We have all the tools online, and all you need is an idea, something unique that that really fills a need in the market, and preferably a really wonderful team as well.
Yeah, but there weren't many vegan products available until very, very recently. And I used to run a major vegan festival in Manhattan from 2002 to 2006. I did one a year, and we had like 5 to 10,000 attendees. It was a great event, but it was really a struggle to get exhibitors because there just weren't that many.
No.
And now there are so many.
Oh, yeah. There's a new standard nowadays. Back when I was in college, we had very few options if you wanted green beauty. And now you can actually have makeup that's good for you, and it's beautiful and luxurious, and it performs just as well or better than its conventional competitors. So I've been so impressed with the discoveries we've made.
Okay, so tell me about this little box, and how do you decide what goes in it?
Well, so each month we have a box that features new brands, new products. Every subscriber will fill out a beauty profile when they sign up, so their box is curated to meet their needs and preferences, but every single subscriber receives about the same mix. So you could expect one skincare item, one hair care, one makeup item, one perfume or body care item. Always just a nice, well-balanced mix that has about a $35, $40 total value. So typically that's four products ranging from sample to full size. And it's gifty and it's fun to dive in. And once you really get a feel for the products, you can go on to our site, review them, shop with Pettivore, and you always get 20% back in store credit. So it's a really affordable way to explore luxury vegan beauty.
Mm. And do you, in addition to the subscription, do you sell some of these products?
Yes, we sell all of them. So you can like hop onto our site, and we have every single product we feature plus more. So like this month in our November box, we're featuring a product by One Love Organics. But if you go onto our site, we have all of the vegan products by One Love Organics. So you can buy the full size of the product you tried in your box, and you can explore more as well.
So do you have any idea how many vegan makeup companies there are right now?
Oh, total? It's a lot more than you would think. A lot of them are under the radar, for sure. So, I actually had this grand list of cruelty-free brands, and it was, like, creeping up past the thousands.
Oh!
And, yeah, like, there are tons. And then I would have a new list that was of those brands, which ones are vegan-friendly, and I would sort of shrink it down a little more. And then of those brands, which ones are non-toxic, shrink it down a little more. And now we're able to be very picky and really look at performance as well as product aesthetic. So though there is tons available, we try to sift through all the clutter and make it really effortless for anyone to explore vegan non-toxic beauty. We really wanted to cater to a broader audience than just the vegan community. So in order to do that, we knew that aesthetic and performance had to have a pretty significant role.
Right. So people could just come to your site and say, oh, I want one of these little boxes, and they may not even know that it's or care that it's all made from plants.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we're fine with that. It's actually really exciting. People will email, and they'll be like, I'm not vegan, but I saw your pink box, and I was really curious, so I subscribed, and now I'm just totally hooked on your vegan mascara. And we're like, great, that's amazing. Like, it's wonderful to hear that people are switching from Dior to Lily Lolo. So.
Right. Is that the brand of the mascara?
Yes, the Lily Lolo vegan mascara. It is absolutely one of our top sellers.
And what's wonderful about it? I've never tried it, and I just may have to pick that up, like, right after this program.
Oh, gosh. It's awesome. It's made with clean ingredients, of course, and it doesn't flake. It stays put, and I use it pretty much every day, and it volumizes and lengthens the lashes, not in a, like, faux lash sort of way, but just the perfect amount of drama for every day. So I really love it, and my eyes are very finicky because I have contacts, and that mascara just is wonderful for me.
Oh, that's good to know, because I wear contacts, too. I wear the gas permeable kind, and they're really sensitive to stuff. Mm-hmm. I get the contact attack from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's really, I just learned something. I know where I'm getting my next mascara. That's terrific. Now, is this focused mostly on women? Are there men's care products, too?
Well, a lot of our skincare and body care can be used by men and women. It's more of just an aesthetic preference. So I think a lot of our skin and body care could go both ways easily. And like my boyfriend uses all of the products and he loves them, and I love getting his perspective as well. So really, I think the most things in the shop can be for anyone. It's just a matter of personal preference. We haven't specifically made a men's box, but it's certainly something that we'd like to do in the future.
Great. Okay. Now, I imagine, do you have something special for the holidays?
Yes, we do. We have a luxury limited edition box coming out very, very soon. We're planning to launch it sometime in the first week of December, maybe around the 7th or 8th. But it is extraordinary, and we'll be featuring just top-notch brands. I guess I could give you a little hint and say one of those brands will be Josh Rosebrook, and we are really thrilled to bring his line into the shop.
Okay, and what does Josh Rosebrook make?
So Josh Rosebrook is based out of Palm Springs, and I've actually had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times. And he makes hair care and skin care. A very, very pure products that just, they smell wonderful. I feel like they're almost like therapeutic. They smell so good and earthy. They smell earthy, but not in a crunchy way. They smell like, I think a lot of folks will be so excited to discover this line and find out that they're totally green and that they use responsibly sourced ingredients. The hair care is especially wonderful because it can be tricky convincing shoppers to go from their drugstore go-to brand to a non-toxic hair care brand, because hair is such a big deal to everyone, but Josh Rosebrook does have really wonderful hair care that smells good and will make straw feel like silk.
Okay. I'm looking at your website right now, and you really have a lot of different brands here. Now, are all the brands vegan brands, or some of them have vegan products but other products as well?
Actually, a number of our brands are cruelty-free and vegan-friendly. So, like, for instance, Lily Lolo, which is one of our favorite brands, and 100% Pure, they are certainly mostly vegan, but they still have a couple of non-vegan products that we don't feature. But they're so vegan-friendly, and it's really awesome to feature their vegan products because it can make shopping vegan really effortless, as opposed to going to each individual site and trying to figure out which ones are vegan and which ones aren't. So we do enjoy our vegan friendly partnerships a lot.
Yeah, well, I just discovered the 100% Pure lipstick, which they don't call lipstick because it's more like a glossy thing, but I was very happy when I discovered them, and they're really great in as the weather gets colder, because the lips get chapped, and this is a kind of lipstick that I like to have to give a little color and keep me from getting chapped.
It's an essential.
And lipstick especially, you're eating it. You know, you don't even realize it. But you put it on your lips, you're eating it. It's important that it's clean. I've heard of some disastrous ingredients in lipstick.
Yeah, I think, I was reading the book No More Dirty Looks, and they had a really good tip that I've kept in the back of my head. Whenever anyone is trying to switch to green beauty, it might feel really overwhelming. So a good idea is to just start with the products that you use all the time. So for a lot of us, that's chapstick and deodorant and body soap. And just start with the basics that you put all over your body that really get into your skin, and especially lip products because you eat them. Start with those and try to swap them out early. And then products that you might use on rare occasion, you don't necessarily need to throw them out. Just when you need to replace, go for the green upgrade.
Yeah. Well, this is great because, I've been a vegan since 1988. It's been a long time.
Wow.
Believe me, the makeup was one of the hardest things. I've never had a hard time eating because there's fruits and vegetables. That's the easy part for me. But when it came to makeup, and I'm a performer, and, you know, I needed to have different kinds of makeup, and it was a big challenge for a long time. And I'm still kind of confused because I never really found a mascara that I really, really like. So I'm sincere when I say I'm going to next mascara, I'm checking out Lily Lolo.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay. Are there more things? I see handbags on your site.
Yeah, we just actually launched our lifestyle section, and right now we have a very small selection of Matte and Nat vegan handbags. But come spring, that section will grow significantly, and we'll be bringing in more products by Matte and Nat, as well as their new, it's kind of, I don't know if they've announced it on their social media, but they're going to be launching a shoe line, and so we'll be bringing in their shoes as well.
Great. I'm also looking, you have candles.
Yes.
And I don't know if everyone knows this, but not all wax is plant-based.
No, and a lot of it is petroleum-based, and it's toxic when you light it. So these are not just vegan. They burn clean, and that was really important to me because I love lighting candles, and it can be hard trying to find brands that are transparent enough for my liking, but we just added Woodlot and Light and Cycle, and a little while back we added By Rosie Jane, and all of these candles I have made sure are very, very clean. So there are no synthetics in these candles, no synthetic fragrance, so no headache.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. People, like I just said, the lipstick that some of us may use, we eat it. And the candles that we burn, we breathe. It's just some basic stuff that, you know, we take for granted and never even consider. And these are some simple things, especially for people that have health issues and can't pinpoint what it is that's causing inflammation or aggravation. You really have to get down to basics. What am I putting in my body? What am I putting on my body? What am I breathing in?
Absolutely.
And it could be a candle. Okay, the thing that I've frequently been challenged with is fragrances and perfumes. Do you have some of those on your site?
Oh yeah, we do. I just hopped on my site too. yes, we do, and we'll soon be adding another line called Strange Invisible, which makes luxury non-toxic perfumes. But right now, we carry My Daughter Fragrances and Vertmont Perfumery, and a couple of our lines just launched new perfumes like Kahina Giving Beauty and Lena Hansen. So our perfume section is small but wonderful, and it's growing. Right now, our top-selling non-toxic perfume is Joyful by My Daughter Fragrances, and a lot of people are just blown away that it's made with safe ingredients because it smells as yummy as something you'd find at Sephora, but it's not. It's it's made in Canada and by a really wonderful company that we trust, and it smells delightful.
Well, it has sandalwood in it, and anything that has sandalwood, I love.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have samples of fragrances like this? Because some, you know, it's expensive, $85, I'm looking at it here on the site, and it would be good to get a sniff of it before I went for the bottle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have samples of all of the perfumes. And pretty soon we'll also have samples of all of our luxury skin serums as well. It's definitely something that I want to have readily available for anyone that might be curious to try one of our products, because it is quite an investment. You don't really want to spend $85 and then feel kind of iffy about it.
Yeah.
We want you to feel confident with your purchase, so.
Now, what's in conventional perfumes that we should be concerned about?
The scary thing is, with perfumes, they don't have to tell us what is in their perfume. They can just say fragrance or perfume, and that can stand for 100 toxic ingredients. So that's what makes it so unsettling. We just don't know, and they're not allowed. They don't have to tell us anything. So, I mean, phthalates are very common in conventional perfumes. I think there are just a number of the dirty dozen ingredients that you can find in perfumes. And a lot of folks are very sensitive to the synthetic fragrance. So it's something we try to avoid.
I'm just, like, blown away that they don't have to label some things. Now, are some of these cancer-causing, or they're suspicious? Because they couldn't use them if they were known.
We usually use the Environmental Working Group as our guide, and so whenever ingredients are visible to us, we search every single ingredient on EWG to make sure it's non-toxic. Mm. A lot of rumored ingredients in conventional perfumes are cancer-causing.
Yeah,
so,
crazy.
Like they would have a 9 or an 8 or a 10 out of 10 on EWG, which is very bad. That's the red zone. So we always try to play it safe. And so synthetic fragrance is something we're super weary of.
I wonder how they find out what's in these things, other than testing them to see what's in them.
Oh, EWG?
Yeah.
I believe that it's up to the company to submit the information. So either like skincare ingredients will be visible, so EWG has access. But I don't believe perfumes are on EWG unless mm-hmm. they happen to have the ingredients listed.
Yeah, we need to have some sort of petition or campaign to get fragrance people to divulge their ingredients. But probably the easiest thing to do at this point is just support the green vegan varieties that are upfront about what's
exactly.
going on.
Exactly. And for any brand that might be sort of on the fence of being green or not really green enough, we – like, one thing that excites me and hopefully we can do more of in the future is work with those brands to have cleaner products. And really, like, as an incentive, we would feature them to our audience and sell them in our shop. But we want to have standards and we want to stick to them. But it would be great to be able to work with brands to really clean up their products.
Mm-hmm. Now, other than being green, do you know what some of the ingredients that are animal-sourced are that we might find in fragrances?
Well, musk, animal musk. Sometimes leather is used in perfumes.
Leather?
Yeah.
Okay.
Distilled leather. But aside from musk, I'm not really sure. I usually go for the perfume oils that use plant extracts and floral essences. So I look for ingredients that I recognize and could find in nature. That's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this has been fascinating. Great information. I know as the holidays come along, it's very tempting when we're in stores. There are all these promotional gifts and special items and perfumes and personal care products are very popular gift items, but I recommend thinking twice about grabbing any of those, either for yourself or
yes.
as gift items, if you really care for the people you're giving them to.
Yeah, and well, now there are many more lovely options that you can feel good about.
Yeah, so what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Well, my partner and I are going to be driving to Arkansas tomorrow. We'll be out in a little outside of Little Rock, but that's where I have some relatives with a country house, and we try to all connect there every Thanksgiving, like all my cousins and aunts and uncles. So it'll be a really big gathering. We'll be playing outside a whole lot, hiking,
great.
And I'll be bringing my vegan dishes.
Yeah, so it'll be a mixed meal for herbivores and omnivores.
Yes, and we, the vegans, always bring tons of food to share because the vegan curious will want a couple bites for sure.
Absolutely, and that's the best way to win people over with delicious, beautiful food.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Madeline, it was a pleasure talking to you. I'm definitely going to spend more time on your site. I hope you have a fabulous Thanksgiving. And maybe I'll see
you
at the next comfort food shindig somewhere.
Oh, definitely. I'll be there. Count me in.
Okay, take care. Thanks
for
joining me.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That was Madeline Alcott with Pettivore. And you can find more about Pettivore at pettivore.com. That's P like Peter, E. T like Tom, I, T like Tom, V like Victor, OUR.com. Lots of fun, great gift ideas there. All right, let's take a very quick break, and then we're going to get back and talk about some very important issues. Stay with us. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to the second part of our show today. It's all about food, and I'm going to bring on my next guest. We had him on the program recently in August, and now he's back to talk about some other very important issues. Matthew Liebman is a senior attorney in the litigation program and works on all aspects of the Animal League Defense Fund's civil cases, including investigating reports of animal cruelty, conducting legal research, developing new legal theories, and appearing in court. Matthew, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, well, thanks for stepping in at the last minute because we were going to, originally scheduled to speak with your colleague, Carter Dillard, and I'm glad that you're here. And we're going to talk about a few things, I think, that are going on at the Animal Legal Defense Fund. But the first thing that was brought to my attention has to do with Candy, the chimpanzee. Can you fill us in on that?
Sure, yeah. Candy is a 50-year-old female chimpanzee who spent virtually her entire life in captivity, and not only captive but isolated from all other chimpanzees for at least the last 40 years. She's currently in a barren cage at a facility in Baton Rouge that's an amusement park called Dixie Landing, and the owner keeps her by herself, and for an incredibly social and intelligent species like chimpanzees, that's inhumane to say the least. So the Animal Legal Defense Fund, on behalf of two local Louisiana residents and Louisiana Animal Rights Organization, has filed a lawsuit under the Endangered Species Act to rescue Candy and have her moved to a sanctuary that can give her the kind of care and attention that she deserves.
My understanding is that you lawyers have to be very clever in order to reach a goal using our current legal system, like finding little ways to open the door a little bit more to reduce the exploitation that goes on, and that is actually legal.
That's right. I mean, so in this case, there was a recent change in the law that empowered us to bring this lawsuit. And as people may know, animals, as far as the law is concerned, are generally considered property. But there are laws here and there that do start to recognize the kinds of inherent value that animals have. And one of those statutes is the Endangered Species Act, which prohibits anyone from treating animals, at least those animals that are listed as endangered, in ways that interfere with their natural behavioral patterns. And so in this case, up until very recently, up until September, there was a rule that extended the protections of the Endangered Species Act to chimpanzees in the wild, but it carved out an exemption for captive chimpanzees. And so there was nothing we could do to bring the protections and the rights granted under the Endangered Species Act to protect captive chimps. But thankfully, the agency that oversees the statute realized that it doesn't have the legal authority to make those kinds of distinctions, and in September extended the same protections to captive chimps. And so we said, obviously, Candy is confined in a way that interferes with her natural behavioral patterns, that causes her injury, that causes her to suffer both physically and psychologically. And so we're using the protections of the Endangered Species Act to sort of carve out some protections for Candy.
Well, I've got like all these different questions popping into my head. So do you know what was the motivation behind changing the Endangered Species Act? Like, what triggered someone to say, oh, the captive chimps, we really shouldn't have them as an exemption?
Yeah, well, the Endangered Species Act itself hasn't been changed. The change is in how the Fish and Wildlife Service has interpreted the statute. So,
why did they change their interpretation? Who was behind that?
Well, that was a coalition of organizations that filed a petition, essentially pointing out that the agency didn't have the authority to draw lines between captive and wild animals, and given the way that Congress wrote the Endangered Species Act, it should apply equally. And I think the agency saw the petition, saw comments that were submitted on the petition, like ones that we at ALDF submitted, and agreed that it ought to abolish the split listing.
Okay, chip, chip, chip. We have to chip away at all of these things and to really get to a better place. Now, how did Candy get to where she is today? What was she involved in as a young chimp?
She was actually purchased in 1965 when she was 6 months old by the family of the person we're suing now. So it's a man named Samuel Haynes Jr., and his family has owned amusement parks in Baton Rouge for a couple of generations. And in 1965, the family purchased Candy from just a breeder in New York and kept her as essentially a family pet for a couple of years. And then as she got older and more unwieldy, they moved her to their park, which at that time was called Fun Fair Park. And they had her doing tricks, riding a tricycle, the kind of, you know, circus tricks you would imagine at an amusement park in 1968. And she did that for a few years until about 1971, and then was just put in a cage and stayed there. That cage was about the size of a large dog kennel. 10 feet by 4 feet by 6 feet. So incredibly small. She was in that cage for 20 years until 1990. And then she had a slightly larger cage built where she lived for another 10 years and then was moved to the cage she's in now where she's been for 15 years. And for that entire duration, she's been by herself.
You know, I'm just sitting here thinking of the word amusement park. And for someone like Candy, there's no amusement.
No, a friend of mine came up with the term abusement park, which I think is much more appropriate.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so what do you think is going to happen?
Well, we're optimistic. The Endangered Species Act is one of the most robust statutes protecting those animals who are unlucky enough to be endangered. And so we think we have a very strong case on the law. We have two incredible plaintiffs, a woman named Kathy Bro and a woman named Holly Reynolds, who have both been working on Candy's cause, campaigns to free her, for more than 30 years. So we're really optimistic that once this case, gets before a judge, that we'll be in a good spot, but time will tell.
So chimpanzees are considered an endangered species?
They are, yes.
And don't we have chimpanzees in laboratories for animal testing?
Well, we do. There's been other developments on that as well. In 2013, the National Institutes of Health announced that it was going to essentially cease funding biomedical research that involves chimpanzees, which is incredibly significant development. The United States is one of only two countries in the world that conducts biomedical research or invasive biomedical research on chimpanzees. There was a caveat to that announcement in 2013, which was that they had some sort of strict guidelines for research they would continue to still fund, and they were going to maintain a colony of 50 chimpanzees just in case they needed them for research. Just last week, they announced that they were going to go the rest of the distance and stop funding it entirely and not maintain a colony of 50 chimpanzees. So all the federally owned chimpanzees are going to be sent to sanctuaries, and there won't be any more federal funding for invasive research on chimpanzees. There's still some research that's conducted on chimpanzees that's not federally funded, and those chimps aren't owned by the federal government, so the NIH decision won't affect those. But this is definitely a huge step in the abolition of the use of chimpanzees in biomedical research.
I understand now. So if it's not related, if the work isn't related to the NIH, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, although those will also, now that chimps are listed under, or captive chimps are listed under the ESA, anyone proposing to do research that actually harms these animals will need to at least apply for and receive a permit from Fish and Wildlife Service before they can violate the Endangered Species Act.
I was reading about a week ago, this story about Candy was in the New York Times, and yeah. I just thought it was interesting how they kind of focused on the fact that she smokes.
Yeah, that's one of the tragic parts of this is she's confined in a cage, but there's no real barrier from the public and no signage or anything, and people will actually throw lit cigarettes into her cage, and she'll pick them up and smoke them, and the facility just seems to find that to be a joke rather than sort of the real threat to her health that it is. And the other thing that they do is instead of providing her with water, which chimps obviously need, they give her Coke to drink. So she, smokes cigarettes and drinks Coca-Cola, and that's been, one of the aspects of it that people have picked up on, because I think that's so intuitively upsetting that, this social animal that should be thriving with members of her own kind and eating fresh fruits and vegetables and drinking water is sitting alone in a concrete cage drinking Coke and smoking cigarettes.
It's just wrong from so many angles. And where people would be amused that a chimp would want to drink Coke and smoke cigarettes, it's like, oh, they're just like us. But then if we thought they were just like us, why would we want to keep them in a cage?
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense ever.
Yeah. And it does seem to be on the way out. I mean, with the announcement from NIH, with the fact that these captive chimps are also listed under the ESA now, with the fact that the Federal Animal Welfare Act requires that anyone exhibiting these animals provide them with an environment that's suitable to their psychological well-being, I think is all suggesting that these animals are much more than property and we can't do what we want with them just to amuse ourselves.
And where would Candy go if they let her go?
She would go to a wonderful sanctuary in Louisiana called Chimp Haven, which has offered to take Candy. I actually visited there about 8 years ago, right before I started at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and toured their facility. And it's amazing outdoor naturalistic enclosures where these chimpanzees really have the opportunity to be chimpanzees again. They have, I think, close to 200 chimpanzees on site, full-time veterinarians, animal behaviorists, and a whole host of people ready to provide Candy with the life that she's been denied for so long.
Well, I wish the best for Candy, and not just for Candy, but for all chimps, because as we were talking about earlier, once improvements are made, it's good for all, and then there's an opportunity to make things even better as you continue to chip away at the laws to make it harder and harder to exploit any sentient being.
Yeah, and I think these cases, and the language of the Endangered Species Act recognizes an implicit right of animals to sort of exist in their own context, to be who they are. There's a prohibition on what the statute calls harassing animals, and that's been interpreted to mean anything that interferes with their natural behavior. So I think there's an implicit right to autonomy, an implicit right for these animals to act in ways that's consistent with their capacities. And, you know, when humans deny that, that's a violation of their rights.
When you come from the perspective that we do, I find that some of these laws are kind of ridiculous. So, excuse me, we have the Endangered Species Act, but if we can breed millions of animals and they're not endangered, then we can do whatever we want with them.
Yeah. I mean, and it's unfortunate that there's selective appreciation of how, you know, what animals are and their right to exist on their own. And just as we sort of don't say humans shouldn't have rights just because there's a lot of us, we shouldn't make the same arguments for animals. So the fact that a cow or a chicken or a pig is not endangered doesn't mean that we have a right to do with them what we will. But for, you know, various reasons, the law has decided to focus on those animals who have threats to their very existence. And certainly extinction is a unique kind of harm, and we should avoid it. But I think from a moral philosophy perspective, it doesn't make sense to only protect those animals who are endangered, and we ought to recognize that even non-endangered animals deserve compassion and rights.
Okay, can we talk about some other things that the Animal League is working on?
Sure.
Okay, so in August, we talked about the ag-gag law that was overturned in Idaho. Is it Idaho?
Yep, Idaho.
Yeah. Are there any new updates on that?
We just got the judgment from the court. So when we talked in August, the court had just issued its decision, which was a 29-page analysis of the law and conclusion that this law, which essentially makes it a crime to do an undercover investigation at a slaughterhouse or a factory farm, that statute was unconstitutional. And obviously we were excited about that. Just last week we got the judgment, which essentially gives effect to the decision and permanently enjoins the state from enforcing the statute. And so as of now, it's legal to conduct an undercover investigation in Idaho thanks to the lawsuit. Still remains to be seen whether the state is going to appeal that decision, and if they do, we're certainly ready to fight it all the way up to the Ninth Circuit and to the Supreme Court if it goes that far.
Yeah, great. I was also reading on your site that you're suing the USDA to label foie gras. Are you working on that, or are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, I am familiar with it. It's not one of my cases, but essentially this is a lawsuit that would require the USDA to put warning labels on foie gras, which, as your listeners may know, is a delicacy, but it's produced by force-feeding ducks and geese so much that their liver balloons to several times its normal size. And this is, medically speaking, the induction of a disease in the liver. It's a fatty liver disease that these farms are inducing in birds and then turning around and selling at exorbitant prices. And so given that this is a product from a diseased animal, it ought to bear some kind of warning to consumers to notify them of that fact.
It's very clever.
Yeah.
It's crazy, the things that we will eat.
I
would like to think that people, if they knew really what foie gras was, would think twice at least about eating it.
Right. Yeah. And we have laws that prohibit the sale of adulterated meat, and that includes meat that comes from a diseased animal. And just because the disease is the whole purpose doesn't make it any less diseased. So
no, but if they had a good marketing campaign behind them and a French name, they might be able to sell that diseased food.
That's right. And in fact, that's another lawsuit that we've done in the foie gras battle. There's a place called Hudson Valley Foie Gras in New York that was advertising their foie gras as the humane choice. And anyone who knows anything about how foie gras is produced knows that there's nothing humane about it. So we sued them under false advertising law, and they ultimately decided to remove that term from their marketing.
Have any basis? Were they doing anything different that they thought made it more humane?
No. And, you know, the foie gras lobby likes to portray itself as this sort of artisanal, local, small-scale endeavor. But the fact is that foie gras farms are, for all practical purposes, factory farms. We're talking about thousands and thousands of animals being treated like objects, and that's no different from factory farming as far as I'm concerned.
I lived in the south of France in the early 90s, and I had a friend who was classic French, and he believed in all of the French culinary traditions, and he would smirk and sneer, you know, at my vegan dishes and all of the things that I would talk about. And he was absolutely convinced that the geese and ducks that were being force-fed with a tube down their throat enjoyed it.
Yeah, we hear that a lot from their side, and I think it's cognitive dissonance or an echo chamber, but all the veterinarians who we speak to about this issue certainly say that it can be immensely painful for the animals, and undercover investigations at these farms, which anyone can find on YouTube, exposes that lie.
Okay, we have a few minutes left. Can you tell us what other interesting things you're working on?
Sure. So I've got... let's see. One of my other cases is another Endangered Species Act case concerning an orca named Lolita, who has been confined in a small tank at a place called the Miami Seaquarium for more than 40 years. She was captured in the wild off of Puget Sound in Washington when she was just a few years old, and then sold to this facility that's kept her in what would, for us, equate to virtually a bathtub, and she's been there for decades. So we filed a suit under the Endangered Species Act because her pod is listed as endangered. The population that she comes from is an endangered species, and so this is a similar case to the one I talked about with Candy, and that case is currently pending. That's another one of the areas that we're working on. We do a lot of captive wildlife issues as well.
Who names these who names these non-human animals Candy and Lolita?
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know where they come up with it.
I don't know, but they sound like abused women names to me.
They do. They do. And maybe that's not accidental. Anyone who's read Carol Adams and the Sexual Politics of Meat knows that patriarchy and animal abuse often go hand in hand.
That's right. Okay. Anything else we'd like to hear about?
Yeah. Sure. Let's see. What are some of the other cases? You know, we have the ag-gag fight is ongoing, as we talked about, in Idaho, but we also have our case in Utah. And so that case is wrapping up discovery, and we're hoping that we get a little bit of movement on that case in the near future. So people who want to stay up to date on that case and any of the others that I talked about, including a lot of cases that involve veganism and factory farming, you can sign up at our website, which is aldf.org, and we're on all the usual social media sites. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and people can learn how they can keep up with our cases and get involved themselves on anything from captive wildlife to dog and cat shelters to puppy mills to captive wildlife cases.
It's a great site. There's a lot of wonderful information, and you're doing great work.
Thank you so much.
What I want to know now is, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Oh, we're going to a vegan Thanksgiving. Some friends of ours host a vegan Thanksgiving that we've been to for the last 4 years. So I'm in charge of cocktails and a pie this year. my partner is going to be making some veggies as well. I'll probably make up a batch of seitan. But, yeah, vegan Thanksgiving with some close friends and should be fun.
And have you visited barnivore.com to check out all the alcoholic beverages that are vegan friendly?
I have, yes. I love that site.
That's a very useful resource.
Yep.
You know, that's probably one of the last things people think about, where you can find animal ingredients. But yes, they're there, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Matthew, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food again and on short notice. And it was great to get updated on all of these great campaigns. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Take care.
Okay. All right, that was Matthew Liebman of the Animal League, Defense Fund, the Animal Legal Defense Fund. Thank you very much. And go to aldf.org for more. We just have a few minutes left, and it's Thanksgiving, and the thing that I'm excited about is we monitor what pages are visited on our nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and our Thanksgiving recipes have been getting lots and lots of hits, lots of traffic, and that's exciting because more people want to know how to make delicious plant-based foods. Either they're vegan or they want to eat more plant foods, or maybe people are having a dinner and they know that there are vegans coming. Whatever it is, it's good, and I'm thrilled to know about it. And if you haven't decided what you're doing for Thanksgiving, or if you are looking for some plant-based items, we do have some wonderful recipes. Some of them are traditions in our family. Right there at the front of our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, you can see our Thanksgiving celebration feast, and there's lots of recipes that are listed there. The other thing I want to mention is we went to the Anti-Fur Society conference this past weekend, and we filmed a bit of the fashion show that went on. And this was a fashion show of U.S. and international designers that are making cruelty-free clothing made from fabrics that don't come from animals. And some of these outfits were stunning, and we made a little video about it. And again, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and watch that. It's really fun, and you can check out all of the new designers that are creating some beautiful, beautiful clothing to show once again, everybody, we do not need to exploit, harm, kill, and torture non-human animals for food, for clothing, for personal care products. We can all lead a very happy, beautiful life in luxury if we choose to, without exploitation. Thank you very much. So I wish you all a very lovely Thanksgiving if you are celebrating it. And the best thing to do is think about the things that you're grateful for. That's what Thanksgiving's about. And I think it's something that's great to do absolutely every day when we realize the things that we're grateful for, not the things that we want and the things we can't have and the things that other people have that we want. No. The things that we have that we can be grateful for. It feels so good. So I'm sending that out to you. Let's all tune in some love here and during the week and be grateful for what we have and have a delicious week.